Hello and welcome to the second part of the five mistakes you are making if your critically ill loved one is in an induced coma and not waking up. So let's move on with mistake number two. And mistake number two is you and your family are not looking at the bigger picture. So let's move on and let's look at what other mistakes. I have seen many families of critically ill patients in intensive care make over and over again when their loved one isn't waking up after an induced coma. I have also found that families in intensive care struggle to look at the bigger picture when their loved one isn't waking up after an induced coma in intensive care. So, what do I mean by that? The bigger picture when a critically ill patient is in an induced coma for a critical illness is quite frankly that they are critically ill. Critical illness in intensive care simply means that your loved one's health is compromised to the point where they need treatment for their critical illness in intensive care, and that often includes artificial life support. Now, given that you are here and you're watching this or listening to this, I know for a fact that your critically ill loved one needs artificial life support because, as I explained to you earlier, an induced coma always goes hand in hand with mechanical ventilation and a breathing tube, and that's classified as artificial life support. In essence, it means that the critical illness of your loved one requires the function of the lungs to be taken over by a mechanical ventilator and a breathing tube. Your loved one couldn't live without it. That's very significant if you think about it, because every healthy person is not even thinking about breathing in and out. It just naturally happens. In fact, it's a reflex that's just naturally triggered by the body. The fact of the matter is that for whatever reason, a critically ill patient had to be induced in an artificial coma, was put on a ventilator in order to keep them alive. In the example that I gave you earlier, Mary was put in an induced coma because she had to have emergency as well as life-saving open heart surgery. After Mary was diagnosed with an acute heart attack, she had to have open heart surgery to save her life. And therefore, after 5 hours of surgery and the bypass grafts, she couldn't just be taken out of the induced coma and be woken up. The fact of the matter is that Mary has never been as close to death ever before as she has been since she sustained the heart attack. Open heart surgery, as well as any other major surgery that requires a post-operative stay in intensive care, will most likely go hand in hand with an induced coma and hence a breathing tube and mechanical ventilation. Again, unless your critically ill loved one had multiple previous intensive care admissions, there is a very good chance that your critically ill loved one has never been as close to death as at the time of their intensive care admission and their intensive care stay. Now, I gave an illustrative example with Mary after open heart surgery, not waking up. And I have now also mentioned a few times that any other major type of surgery requiring intensive care results in an induced coma, mechanical ventilation, and a breathing tube. And the reasons I keep mentioning major surgery, including the induced coma and not waking up, is that it's very common in intensive care. However, I also need to point out that many, many other situations in intensive care require an induced coma and hence can trigger a delay in waking up. For example, if your critically ill loved one gets admitted to intensive care with a severe pneumonia, severe asthma, or COPD, COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. there is a very good chance that your critically ill loved one can't sustain adequate breathing and ventilation by themselves. Therefore, a common scenario is to put your critically ill loved one on a ventilator with a breathing tube. Make sure that they get adequate oxygenation and that this very vital bodily function that every healthy person isn't even thinking about is taken care of. Mechanical ventilation and the breathing tube are so uncomfortable that critically ill patients in intensive care wouldn't be able to tolerate it without being induced into a coma. I'll give you another example. Fred is a healthy 74-year-old man who enjoys life. He lives on a farm with his 70-year-old wife, Stacy, and even though he's semi-retired, he still enjoys doing some work on the farm every single day. In the last few days, Fred hasn't been feeling well, and he feels like he has a flu coming on. No big deal, Fred thinks to himself. He just has to slow down a bit and it'll go away soon, as it always does. This time, Fred seems to be getting worse and worse, and after staying in bed for 3 days, his wife Stacy gets very worried and she calls their GP to make a home visit. By now, Fred has a temperature that is well above 101 degrees Fahrenheit or 38.5 degrees Celsius. Fred's GP is very concerned when he examines Fred, and when listening to his chest, he can barely hear any air entry. The GP thinks that Fred has a pneumonia, and he thinks that it's best to send Fred to hospital. As Fred is too weak to get up, his wife rings an ambulance for transport to the next hospital. When Fred arrives at the hospital in the emergency room, he has an oxygen saturation of 84%, and his oxygenation in his blood is about 54 millimeter per mercury. On top of that, he has a really poor chest x-ray result, and the infection markers in his blood are significantly elevated. Therefore, he has been diagnosed with a severe pneumonia. His level of consciousness is slowly but surely dropping, and Fred is getting more and more short of breath. The doctors and the nurses in the emergency room decide to intubate Fred and send him to intensive care. Intubation means putting in a breathing tube and a ventilator. Intubation also means that Fred will be in an induced coma, and he will simultaneously have the breathing tube inserted into his throat, and he will be put on mechanical ventilation. Fast forward. Fred is now in intensive care. He's been placed in an induced coma and he's on mechanical ventilation with a breathing tube in his throat. For the next few days, Fred is being treated for the pneumonia. His lungs get a rest by having the ventilator do the work for him. He'll stay in an induced coma and he will be treated for the infection with intravenous antibiotics. After about 7 or 8 days of Fred being in intensive care, in the induced coma, on mechanical ventilation, and with a breathing tube in his mouth, the signs are there that the antibiotics are doing their job and that the infection is clearing up. This is also evident in his chest x-rays that Fred is having daily, and the infection markers in his blood are going down. When Fred was first placed on mechanical ventilation, he was on lots of ventilation support with lots of positive pressure and oxygen up to 80%. Keep in mind, room air is 21% of oxygen. So 80% of oxygen means he's on almost four times the amount of oxygen that's in room air that we're breathing in. Now, 4 days after Fred's admission to hospital and intensive care, the doctors and the nurses are thinking that it's time to slowly reduce sedation and that it's time to get Fred out of the induced coma in stages. Fred, unlike our first example, Mary, is on midazolam, which is also known as Verst, which is a long-acting sedative. And Fred is also on morphine, which is an opiate and a strong painkiller, to keep him in the induced coma. I just want to quickly explain that in our first example with Mary, she was on propofol. Propofol or Diprovan is a short-acting sedative. And Mary was also on morphine. And Mary therefore should have woken up much quicker than Fred, because Fred is on midazolam or Verst, which is a long-acting sedative. Therefore, from experience, taking critically ill patients out of an induced coma after midazolam or Verst sedation compared to propofol or Diprovan sedation might take even longer, but it doesn't necessarily have to. Given that critically ill patients in an induced coma on midazolam or Verst tend to be slower to wake up compared to critically ill patients on propofol or Diprovan, you may have to be even more patient when your loved one is being woken up after an induced coma. Midazolam, also known as Verst, has a much longer half-life compared to propofol or Diprovan, and therefore it stays in the body for much longer. Therefore, once midazolam or Verst is being seized, the effects of it are usually longer present compared to propofol. Midazolam or Verst is also classified as a benzodiazepine, and the short version for benzodiazepine is benzo or benzos, and they tend to be addictive to people, especially when being misused. When critically ill patients in intensive care are given benzodiazepines in form of midazolam or Verst, patients are at risk of addiction, and therefore they can withdraw or go through withdrawal when the midazolam or the Verst is being seized, or even when being slowly and gradually weaned off. Therefore, the longer a critically ill patient is staying on midazolam or Verst, the higher the chances are that they are going through a withdrawal when being taken out of the induced coma and when they are being woken up. For example, if a critically ill patient is in intensive care on a mechanical ventilator, has a breathing tube in their throat, and is in a prolonged induced coma — prolonged induced coma is usually anything above 7 days — intensive care units tend to use midazolam or Verst as opposed to propofol or Diprovan. They still need to use a painkiller, also known as opiates, as well, and in most cases morphine or fentanyl are being used to treat the pain. Morphine and fentanyl also have the tendency to be addictive to people, and therefore the combination of midazolam or Verst for sedation and morphine or fentanyl for pain relief are a powerful combination to make a prolonged induced coma possible in the first place. The induced coma can be a healing force in and of itself, as it gives the body time to rest, heal and recover and deal with the critical illness. At the same time, an induced coma should only last for as long as necessary, as it comes with powerful and negative side effects such as mechanical ventilation, immobility, addiction to drugs, nightmares, psychosis, the formation of blood clots, and the list goes on and on. Therefore, minimizing the time spent in an induced coma is paramount for the reasons that I just mentioned. If you are concerned that your critically ill loved one is being placed in an induced coma for longer than necessary, you should discuss this with the intensive care team. Now that you are learning about this in detail, you have enough information to state your point and argue your case. Let's go back to Fred, who has now been in intensive care for 4 days. It looks like the intravenous antibiotics are working. His chest x-ray is clearing up. His infection markers in his blood are coming down, and he's getting less and less support from the ventilator. He's now coming to the point where the doctors can reduce his sedation and basically reduce the amount of midazolam or burst and morphine by 50%. After the nurses have reduced the sedation, Fred has been given by 50%, they want to assess whether Fred will show any signs of waking up. Fred's wife Stacy has been very patient thus far, and she has trust in Fred's ability to master this challenge so that his body can fight his critical illness. Fred has been a hard-working farmer all his life, and Stacy thinks that he'll have enough strength to get through this as well. By the way, this is a really good mindset to have, and if you are finding yourself that the intensive care team is overtly negative towards the critical illness of your loved one, you getting informed, you doing your own research, you knowing what questions you need to ask, and therefore feeling more confident, will automatically make you more positive. Staying positive, I believe, is often half of the battle. The next morning, Stacy visits Fred again, and the only thing that has changed so far is that the nurses were able to reduce some of the ventilation support overnight, and Fred is taking some breaths by himself now. Other than that, Fred hasn't been showing any signs of waking up. However, given that they've reduced the midazolam or burst by 50% and the morphine by 50%, it's too early for Fred to fully wake up as yet anyway. The good news is that Fred isn't showing any signs that he's withdrawing from the medications he's been given for the induced coma for the last few days. Therefore, the next steps of taking the midazolam or burst and morphine off completely can be taken. Fred has now been in intensive care for a total of 8 days. And he's now at the point where he's off the sedative medications that kept him in the induced coma. Given that his medical condition has improved, and given that his pneumonia has been clearing up, the intensive care team wants to take him off the ventilator as quickly as possible. At the end of day 8 since he first came to intensive care with a severe pneumonia, Fred is still not waking up. He's showing no signs of eye opening, he's not responding to voice, and all he's doing for now is taking some breaths on his own, on top of the breaths he's getting from the ventilator. Again, just like in Mary's case that I explained earlier, not much has happened, and so far it's just business as usual in a busy intensive care unit. One of the reasons why I can describe this process of waking up after an induced coma to you in a video or in an audio recording or in an ebook is simply because I have seen it over and over and over again. I have probably seen hundreds, if not thousands, of critically ill patients going through this process of waking up after an induced coma. Therefore, from now on, Fred's path to moving out of the induced coma is similar or almost similar to Mary in our first example. The only difference is that Fred had midazolam or burst instead of the propofol, and therefore a delay in waking up is more likely, as midazolam is a long-acting sedative and propofol is a short-acting sedative. Therefore, intensive care teams expect critically ill patients who had midazolam instead of propofol for sedation to wake up slower. As a rule of thumb, propofol is often given for short-term sedation and midazolam is given for longer-term sedation. Therefore, if Fred hasn't woken up after another 2 to 3 days, the doctors and the nurses may even be more casual about it than in Mary's case. Again, given that Fred has just been through a severe critical illness, his body will need time to adapt to these new circumstances, and his body will need time to rest and heal. One way to look at your critically ill loved one not waking up quickly after an induced coma is that they just can't be bothered, meaning they're just too tired and they need to rest. Fred, just like Mary in our earlier example, is taking his time to wake up, and Stacy, his wife, is certainly getting more and more concerned that he still hasn't woken up. However, at the same time, she's very pleased to see that his pneumonia has cleared up, that he started to breathe, and that he's trying to open his eyes, even though he still hasn't fully opened them. After 10 days in intensive care, Fred is now starting to quote-unquote fight the ventilator. He's breathing by himself, he's coughing, and he's slowly but surely trying to reach the breathing tube with his hands, and he's trying to take it out by himself, which again is a very good sign. He's not at a point where he's making eye contact with people yet, but he's now opening his eyes spontaneously. He's not following simple commands as yet, such as squeezing fingers or wiggling toes. However, he's moving all of his limbs, and therefore he's not too far away from getting off the ventilator and having the breathing tube in his mouth removed. Again, the technical term for removal of the breathing tube in intensive care is extubation. On day 11, since Fred has been to intensive care, he has finally become more rousable and awake, and he's now in a position where he's making eye contact. He's getting stronger and stronger, and he can finally follow simple instructions, like squeezing fingers. He's therefore woken up enough to have the breathing tube removed and breathe by himself. Again, just like in our first example with Mary, where it took her a total of 9 days to finally wake up, it took Fred 11 days to wake up and have the ventilator and breathing tube in his throat removed. I really can't stress this enough, that anything between 3 days and even 14 days of not waking up after an induced coma is nothing unusual in intensive care. It really depends on the person, on the nature of their critical illness. It also depends on their personality, and also on how much time they need to recover. Again, there is no such thing as one size fits all when it comes to waking up after an induced coma in intensive care. I really hope this is bringing things home for you. The number of people that first come to my intensivecarehotline.com website in order to find out how long it'll take for their critically ill loved one to wake up after an induced coma is extremely high. And I get the feeling that they all expect miracles and a fast-track recovery. Again, intensive care is a highly volatile and highly unpredictable environment, and therefore, waking up after an induced coma can sometimes be like a turtle race. That leads me to the next mistake that families of critically ill patients in intensive care are constantly and unconsciously making when looking for signs when their critically ill loved one is going to wake up. So, let's look at mistake number 3. You and your family expect waking up after an induced coma like switching on a light with a switch, whereas in reality it's more like switching on a light with a dimmer. As you have seen by now with the 2 examples that I've given you with Mary and Fred, who both took that time to wake up after their induced comas, it was more like a turtle crawling to the finish line rather than a Formula One car racing to the finish line. One thing that I learned and eventually realized when working with thousands of critically ill patients and their families in intensive care over the years was that they all thought that waking up after an induced coma is an event. Most families think that their loved one will just miraculously wake up and they will be back to normal in a heartbeat. The truth of the matter is that waking up after an induced coma in intensive care is a process and not an event. Waking up after an induced coma is more like switching on a light with a dimmer slowly, rather than switching on a light with a switch. There is always the exception to the rule, of course, and there are some critically ill patients in intensive care who wake up quickly after sedation and opiates or pain medications have been seized. However, given that you are reading this ebook, you watch this video, and you might listen to the audio recording, your critically ill loved one most likely still hasn't woken up, and therefore you are seeking out this information. Again, you've got to keep in mind that the medications that are being used for inducing your critically ill loved one into a coma are quite potent drugs. Please also keep in mind that the induced coma is always going hand in hand with mechanical ventilation and a breathing tube in a patient's throat. Mechanical ventilation and a breathing tube in your critically ill loved one's throat are extremely uncomfortable and therefore require sedation, painkillers, and the induced coma. Also keep in mind, a healthy person is breathing through negative pressure, because when we breathe in, we are creating negative pressure in our lungs. On the other hand, mechanical ventilation and the breathing tube is creating positive pressure in the lungs and is therefore counterintuitive to our natural physiology. Therefore, an induced coma may come with the negative side effects of not waking up quickly after being woken up once the sedation and painkillers have been used. As you have also seen in our two examples with Mary and Fred, they have very much taken their time waking up after the induced coma. Therefore, I think I'm even exaggerating when I say that waking up after an induced coma is like switching on a light with a dimmer. In some instances, it's even much slower than that. Therefore, I have also mentioned that it's like a turtle crawling to the finish line. Let's move on to mistake number 4. You and your family don't realize that your critically ill loved one also needs time to heal from their critical illness, irrespective of how quickly you want them to wake up. Now, the delay and slow pace of waking up is a result of the accumulation of powerful sedative and opiate drugs in the body system of your critically ill loved one. It's also a result of the disease process. And it's a result of recovery time needed in order to effectively deal with the critical illness. I really want to focus on the last point here, where I want to highlight that recovery time is needed in order to effectively deal with the critical illness. Now, whatever critical illness your loved one is battling, and whatever critical illness got your loved one admitted to intensive care in the first place, there is, once again, no size fits all. No matter how much we, as logical and rational human beings, try and standardize everything, try and put it in a box in order to make sense out of it, when it comes to waking up after an induced coma, this approach is doomed to fail. Again, there is no such thing as one size fits all when it comes to waking up after an induced coma. Critical illness in intensive care is a massive and stressful life event, and it can't be underestimated. There is a very good chance that your critically ill loved one's admission to intensive care is bringing them as close to death as they have ever been, and the risk of your critically ill loved one not leaving intensive care alive is a potential reality. If you want to know more about how many patients are leaving intensive care alive, you can also check out another ebook. And the name of the ebook is The 9 Myths of Being a Critically Ill Patient in Intensive Care. Now, I'm not suggesting that your critically ill loved one is dying in intensive care. However, they are critically ill after all, and that's a fact that you can't ignore. Therefore, your critically ill loved one's body is being forced to deal with massive challenges that have taken their toll. I don't know how you feel, but whenever I feel sick and I spend a couple of days in bed, I feel awful. And that's just for having a bad flu. Imagine you're in hospital for a critical illness. How do you feel? You feel pretty awful. And that's probably said mildly. Therefore, even though your loved one will most likely not remember most of their stay in intensive care, they still will need time to heal, they will need time to recover, and time to give their sick body a rest. And when your loved one is critically ill in intensive care, they're not just having a flu, they're battling a critical illness of some sort. Therefore, give them and their body the time to heal, to recuperate, and to deal with this challenge in their own time. Again, no matter how much you, your family, and the intensive care team want to speed up the process, your critically ill loved one most likely won't remember much of their stay in intensive care, and therefore also won't remember whether they woke up in 2 hours, in 2 days, in 6 days, in 10 days, or even in 3 weeks. Time is a good, if not the best, healer, and therefore be patient and give your critically ill loved one the time they need to deal with and master this challenge. Mistake number 5. You and your family ignore the age factor. Now, in the real-world examples that I've given you, I deliberately chose Fred, who's 74 years of age, and Mary, who's 83 years of age. From my clinical experience, as well as from my counseling and consulting practice experience here at intensivecarehotline.com, there is a higher chance that with increasing age, waking up is slightly more difficult and is slightly more delayed. I can confidently say that the higher the age for a critically ill patient, it directly correlates with a delay in waking up after the induced coma. It probably makes sense that when you're older that everything is slowing down in your body, and that also includes your metabolism. Your critically ill loved one's metabolism is crucial when waking up after an induced coma, because all the sedative and opiate drugs are being metabolized by the kidneys and the liver. Therefore, there is a really high chance that your critically ill loved one with increasing age will need more time to wake up, because it simply takes longer for the sedative and opiate drugs to be metabolized and therefore also excreted by the body. As long as there are sedative and opiate drugs, quote unquote, floating around in the body system, it often shows in not waking up as quickly as expected. On the one hand, I'm pointing out the age factor. However, on the other hand, you might be reading this ebook or watch the video or listen to the audio recording, and your critically ill loved one is really young and they're still not waking up after their induced coma. Again, I have seen all facets when critically ill patients in intensive care are not waking up, and it certainly isn't always an age factor. There are 25-year-old patients in intensive care who don't wake up as quickly as expected, and they may just take as long as an 83-year-old patient. Again, there are always exceptions to the rule. If you think that your critically ill loved one is young enough to wake up quicker, you should still go back to mistakes 1 to 4 and read through the information again, because it still applies. I have seen critically ill patients in intensive care above the age of 70 who have woken up relatively quickly, and at the same time I have seen critically ill patients in intensive care who are 30 years, 25 years of age, who have just taken as much time to wake up than an 80-year-old critically ill patient. The same experience I have found in my one-on-one counseling and consultancy practice with my clients at intensivecarehotline.com. There are plenty of families in intensive care who seek out my advice that have a young family member that's not waking up after an induced coma. And there are plenty of families in intensive care who seek out my one-on-one counseling and consulting advice, and they have a loved one critically ill in intensive care that's not waking up, who's in a much older age bracket. I just can't stress and highlight this enough, that there is no one size fits all. And again, please be patient. Give your critically ill loved one the time, the nurturing, and the peace they need in order to wake up in their own time. Last but not least, I also want to point out that good nursing care is very important too. And that's also an area that's highly underestimated. It's also difficult for families of critically ill patients in intensive care to assess what is considered good nursing care. Let me explain in more detail. Good nursing care when trying to bring somebody out of the induced coma and wake up are things like making sure your critically ill loved one is sitting up in bed for stimulation, unless there is a contraindication due to the nature of their injuries, for example, fractures. What's also extremely important is that the nurses are doing regular mouth care, eye care, as well as nose care. Regular body washes and back washes for hygiene and stimuli. They also need to be regularly turned from side to side to prevent pressure sores. It's also extremely important to talk to your loved one even if it seems that they can't hear you. It's also very important that you or the nursing staff or the doctors are touching your loved one gently when talking to them. And it's even more important to explain to your loved one what has happened and what is currently happening. It's also important that your loved one can be sitting out of bed in a recliner chair or on a tilt table even whilst they are ventilated. I can't stress this enough, how important all of these points that I just mentioned are, and they mustn't be underestimated. If you think that your critically ill loved one isn't getting good and the best nursing care, you should raise this with the intensive care team. Depending on the culture in an intensive care unit, sometimes the focus can be more on the medical rather than the nursing care management. However, the nursing side of things when not waking up after an induced coma is just as, if not more, important compared to the medical issues at hand. TLC, also known as tender loving care, empathy, compassion, nurturing, and good communication with families in intensive care is just as important as focusing on the medical needs of a critically ill patient in intensive care. Talking to families and explaining to them in detail is just as important as looking after your critically ill loved one who isn't waking up in a desired time frame. I really hope that this ebook, the videos, and the audio recordings have served you well. And I hope that you now have a better understanding what it means for your critically ill loved one in intensive care to wake up after an induced coma. Hopefully, I was able to change and elevate your thinking, and also to lift your spirits, because I know how frustrated and vulnerable you feel when you are sitting at the bedside in intensive care, and your critically ill loved one isn't waking up after an induced coma. If you want to know more about induced coma, you should also check out another ebook, two videos and two audio recordings that I wrote and made for you for more in-depth information, especially about induced coma. So the other ebook that comes with two videos and two audio recordings that I wrote about induced coma and not waking up is the 10 most frequently asked questions when your loved one isn't waking up after an induced coma. And I put a link below, or I put a link in the ebook. I also hope that I will see you in our other ebooks, reports, videos and audio recordings, so that you can find even more strength, more power, more energy, greater influence, and also hope in your challenging journey through the intensive care landscape. If you'd rather talk to me directly, you can do so by checking out my one-on-one counseling and consulting over the phone, Skype, or via email. Again, there are links to my one-on-one counseling and consulting over the phone, Skype, and via email on the website. For more information, tips, and strategies, if your loved one is critically ill in intensive care, check out our blog section and also check out our Your Questions Answered section, where I answer our readers' questions. You can also always send me an email to support@intensivecareoutland.com if you have any other questions or need any help. And you can also call me directly. You can call me on Skype, and my Skype ID is patrick.hutzel. That's patrick.hutzel. That's my Skype ID. You can also call me on 415-915-0090 in the US. You can call me on 03-8658-2138 in Australia. And you can call me on 0118-324-3018 in the UK. Thank you so much, and I'll see you soon. I wish you and your family all the best.